local station is not on that list, consider letting them know that you like the show.
And if you listen to the show via iTunes, we invite you to leave a review of the show on our iTunes page.
Oh, and to reach us directly with your comments, well, be sure to throw in some faint praise. Email it all to bigpicturescience@seti.org.
My movie about colliding black holes is gonna be big, but the collision? It's wimpy. I mean, a chirp? Chirp ain't gonna generate blockbuster ticket sales. You're an engineer, can't you, enhance it? You know, make the audiences really feel these cosmic monsters.
Yeah, sure. I mean, we've got a sound archive here. Here, listen on the headphones. Check this out.
I like it, but we need more, explosion action.
Okay, how about this?
This isn't just a Hollywood film. This needs to sell on the international market. Make it more, mayhem-y.
Why didn't you say so? Okay, there. Now I'll play it on the monitors.
Yeah, play it on the speakers. Science-y Stuff Productions presents Colliding Black Holes.
What's up, it's your girl Neek Love Rhodes, and you are listening to WHFR Dearborn.
The following program has been pre-recorded. The views expressed by the participants are not necessarily those of WHFR Radio or Henry Ford College. Welcome to We Are Not Alone. We're local investigators, as well as world-renowned scientists and ufologists, share their latest evidence in support of the UFO reality. David Twitchell, and you're listening to WHFR Dearborn. WHFR.fm is the station making waves, and for the next hour, we will be exploring the mysteries of the UFO and abduction phenomenon. And our guest today is Joseph Flammer. Mr. Flammer is a field investigator for a New York chapter of MUFON, and one of MUFON investigations was recently picked as one of the top 10 cases worldwide by MUFON's Scientific Review Board. He is a regular contributor of Page One feature stories and other articles for the MUFON UFO Journal, regarded as the most authoritative source of information about UFOs and aerial phenomenon. He has written two books about UFOs, UFOs Over Long Island, New York, and was published in 2015. And in 2016, he published UFOs Over America, Scariest Cases. Joseph also published three books about ghosts and paranormal phenomenon with his longtime investigations partner, Ms. Diane Hill. Flammer and Hill have spoken together about ghosts over 600 times before audiences across Long Island and in New York City, as well as publishing articles in national magazines. For many years, Joseph has been an award-winning investigative journalist, and we are privileged to have him on the line with us today. Welcome to the show, Joseph.
Thank you, Dave. Glad to be here.
Glad to have you on. And let's see, we were talking earlier before the show about your previous endeavors as a journalist, and what caused you to turn your investigative reporting skills to the paranormal and UFO field.
Mm-hmm.
You can fill us in on that.
Well, you know, I had some rare experiences with UFOs, I think, and also with ghosts. I was 15 when I saw a ghost. I was with five other people. Mm-hmm. And that really led me to pursue ghosts. And I had a strange experience with UFOs, too. I never had any interest in UFOs, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
When I was standing on a rooftop of a barn with another kid who was daring me to jump off, and it was November 1965, when suddenly we heard a thunder and looked up, and a great ball of fire passed over us. And it looked like it had some kind of structure on top of it, and it flew off, and within about 2 minutes, the great blackout of the Northeast took place. That 30 million people without power for 13 hours.
Right.
Some people who witnessed the fireball reported it and said that they believed they saw a UFO that was flying north and might have been in the middle of this mix.
Now, did you see a fireball, per se, or did you see a craft of some kind?
I thought I saw some kind of structure. I remember using the word dome, but I don't know, to be honest with you, Dave. I was 9 years old. It was enormous, though. It was far from me, I would think. But it looked like it was right on top of us, and it looked much larger than a house would if it was... And it was speeding over us at, let's say, 1,000 feet up.
Yeah, if that was a meteor / meteorite, probably would have wiped out New York, you know?
Well, we don't know. All we know is that it was very loud and very fiery. And so that always really kind of stuck in the back of my mind that wow, what was that? I still often think about, what was that thing I seen?
Hmm.
And as time went on, I got involved with ghosts, pursuing ghosts,
mm-hmm.
and I never could fully explain a lot of the cases that involved something that looked like an alien, an insectoid, or a gray. You know, I'd get reports by people who would say, you know, something came in my bedroom and it touched me. And if it touched them, then it's physical. So what is that, a ghost, or is it a... an alien? Ghosts are shades of people. They're not really people. They are ghosts.
Yeah.
So there's a real big difference between the two, and I tried to coordinate both together. My partner, Diane Hill, who I've been working with for 15 years, stays away from this aspect of the paranormal because she doesn't understand it, I think. Doesn't really care to get too deep into it. It's scary. But I had to pursue it to find out more about it because I think it ties in with my own life. I consider myself a contactee, though I don't have any experience where I sat face to face with an alien or have been on a spaceship. I feel that somehow they are communicating. And this is a phenomenon many people across the world, maybe millions of people across the world, have been experiencing,
mm-hmm.
with that they feel they have some kind of telepathic communication with something out there. We have a lot of cases on Long Island that are hard to explain.
Right.
And if you want to, I'll give you a quick case. Yeah.
Yeah, please.
Okay. In 1972, in the famous Hamptons area on Long Island, where a lot of people go to play tennis and party the night away,
mm-hmm.
we had a man who was with his girlfriend. Actually, he was 17 years old, so was she. They were both sitting at a jetty, making out, basically, with each other, being romantic,
mm.
when suddenly she said, "Hey, Gary, what's that?" And Gary looked out and thought he saw a meteorite floating above the water. He said it was traveling about 100 miles an hour, and it flew it suddenly into a right angle and then changed again. He was so fascinated by it, he jumped up and ran to the jetty and stood up on top of the rock to look at it. His girlfriend was in behind him, climbing up the rocks, when suddenly the ball went under the water and flew through the water. He could see it way under the water, the bright light. And the next thing he knew, it was 4 hours later, he and his girlfriend were 300 yards away from where they were looking out at the water. And she was screaming, crying. She didn't understand what just happened. He didn't understand. And he kept saying, what happened to us? What just happened? Following that, the girl didn't want to have anything to do with him. Though they were in love, she now didn't want to even look at him. For the rest of her life, as far as he knows, she has been in and out of mental institutions. She suffered from anorexia. She had many nervous breakdowns, never married. He, on the other hand, went on to not be able, he went into the Green Berets, he wasn't able to sleep. Now, this started in 1972. For 40 years, he told me, he couldn't sleep, not more than an hour or two, because he'd be woken up by dreams of something pursuing him. Hmm. And what was pursuing him? He was never really sure. But he would wake up and tell himself, it's going to be okay, it's going to be okay. And he'd fall back to sleep, and it would happen again. The same dream every night for 40 years. Doctors told him he was going to expire many years ago if he didn't get a good night's sleep.
Yeah.
But he said, hey, I'm still around. At that time, he lost his taste buds. He had no, could never taste food after that. And he was very unhappy because something happened to him during that time, that missing period of 4 hours that he can't explain. Now, we also, this is a case that's very similar that happened in Vermont at Lake Champlain, which I've also investigated. There, they have Buff Ledge, a camp for girls to learn how to swim and horseback ride. And a young man and woman were standing there together on the dock when the same thing happened. Something came, flew under the water. Next thing they knew, they were extremely tired. Time had passed, and they didn't know what they were doing. They walked. They just left each other. They didn't know each other very well. And 10 years later, they both ended up in hypnotic regression, both saying that they felt during this regression that they had been taken aboard a spaceship, and on the spaceship they had been examined. I have many more instances of this, but those are two quick stories that I could say are linked and to something that abducts.
Okay, are these accounts in your book?
Buff Ledge, somebody, Dr. Webb, wrote a book about the Buff Ledge experience. Kathy Martin, who wrote the book Captured, about the Hill experience, the Betty and Barney Hill experience, also wrote extensively about this. And yes, I have mentioned it in my book. The Gary case is the case I studied, so yes, it is in the book. But I was advised by Kathy Martin on certain points during this. She helped guide me in the study. We did use the Hill experience to also touch upon this the study.
Tell us about the case that was picked as one of the top 10 cases by MUFON.
Yeah, this is it was just picked just about a week ago. This is a case where a young boy, 17 years old, came face-to-face with a UFO in a farm area of upstate New York. Now, it's near the Hudson Valley, so I ended up getting the investigation. I noticed when I spoke to the witness that it had been reported 2 days after the actual event, but it hadn't rained yet. So I felt it incumbent upon myself to notify people in the scientific area of MUFON to get there to study the ground, to look for residue, to look for trace evidence that we might be able to use to document the fact that there was an alien, or not necessarily alien, but some kind of craft that was there. The report was that the boy ran out into the field thinking it was heat lightning. He was intrigued by the colors. When he got there, this very large UFO, he said it was bigger than a 20-by-4-foot pool, maybe as much as twice as big, that would beam down a white light, a very hollow kind of light, onto the ground, immediately flattening the 6-feet-tall weeds there. It did it three times. As he watched, it all happened very quickly. He couldn't take his eyes off it, and suddenly he turned around and bolted back home. When he got home, he was frantic, and his sister, who was visiting at the time, decided that she was going to leave the house with her children because he was acting too frantic. It was too much terror for the children to witness. So she hopped in the car and took off, and as she was leaving, she passed that field and saw two large orbs over the field, one orange, one red. And they passed over the field, and she reported it in the witness report, gave us that information. So I notified the scientific area, scientific crew from MUFON. They were involved in another investigation, so I contacted the local New York State director of MUFON, who immediately said he was going to skip out of work, drove 3 hours south to this location, and investigated for almost 4 hours. Wow. He took Geiger counter readings and found that there was trace evidence twice the normal range of radiation, only in the circle that he studied. He quadranted it off with rope and so forth. He took soil samples, which are still in the process of being studied. Meanwhile, I had a lecture the next day on UFOs, and I couldn't get up there, so I had to wait till after the lecture, shot up there, and spent 3 days in upstate New York speaking to people, investigating, photographing, and sitting out on the property, to the same property where this happened, because I got permission to, and studied the sky. It's all vast fields, just large fields. It was scary because there are bears in this area, and I was warned, be careful of bears coming out and, you know, eating you while you're in the field.
Yeah, really?
Also, there were coyotes and so forth. Very, very rural, really a beautiful area, next to a place called Pine Bush, about 6 miles away from a town called Pine Bush, where UFOs have been known to, documented, to land and to take off from. The local town has a UFO festival every year because it's so known, its identity is so tied in with UFOs. This whole area along the Hudson is known to be a UFO hotspot. And so Sam Falvo, who is the state director of MUFON in New York, together we worked to try to document as best we could what took place there. And the scientific review board of MUFON said, hey, you know what? You know, you did a good job. And they awarded us the case.
Very good.
One of the top 10 in New York, in the world, rather.
Yeah, congratulations.
Thank you.
But, wow. So this was on private property that this happened?
This took place. The parcels of land are spacious, and the houses are separated by fairly wide distances. They're not right on top of each other. And behind this row of houses on this street, on this rural avenue, is a line of trees, and beyond that are many, many, many acres of just fields. So behind that, I'm not sure who owned the property, but the private property owners let us interview them on their property, and then they said, feel free to investigate, which is what we requested. So we got an opportunity to really get in there with our cameras and so forth.
So what did the private property owners think about this case?
It's interesting. One of the property owners, that the witness who I had interviewed, and Sam and I interviewed, just moved out of that property, not because of the UFOs, but because the owner of the property proper died. So they had to sell the property to for the rest of the family. A new owner is there. I'm not sure how they feel, but the owners that we dealt with were very supportive because they support MUFON. They believe that MUFON is moving in the correct direction.
Wow, that you got lucky there, huh?
We did. I mean, the whole case is it's all hinged on luck. You know, the fact that people said yes, they can get there, the fact that it didn't rain, the fact that we had the equipment, you know, that people were willing, a lot of luck going on.
Yeah, I guess. I need to take a moment just to remind our listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves, and that's 89.3 FM on your radio, WHFR.FM on your computer. You're listening to We Are Not Alone. And I'm David Twitchell, and we're speaking with investigator and author, Mr. Joseph Flammer. And you said, Joseph, that, you used to mostly investigate paranormal ghost activity.
Right.
Yeah. What drew your attention to that, then?
I'm sorry, what, repeat that question. What was what?
The ghost activity. Why were you, what drew your attention to the ghost activity?
You know, I had no interest in ghosts whatsoever, other than watching Casper the Friendly Ghost on TV. You know, to me, it was just silly stuff.
Right.
But one day, I was with five other kids. We were 15 years old, and we were all sitting at a creek, a rural creek around where I lived. And behind us was a large sandy lot. There was construction going on behind a firehouse. Mm. And as we sat there, we heard footsteps running louder and faster than any human could possibly run. And we turned around. It was right behind us. And there was dust rising into the air, but there was nobody seen in the lot. It was an impossibility. Nobody could be that quick with their feet. It was a large lot. Mm. We were surprised by that and craned our necks and looked, and we couldn't figure out how anybody pulled off the trick of throwing a ball or stomping. And a few minutes later, it happened again. But this time, the sand was rising up into the air over the lot and also down a dusty hill. And then we heard the noise run right beside us. The footsteps were very loud, very fast. We were, taken aback by that at that point. And we got into talking about the Twilight Zone, strange things that happened. We couldn't understand the mystery when suddenly it happened again. Uh-huh. This time, the dust was rising up in the lot. It was rising down next to us. We heard the footsteps run past us and hundreds of feet along the dusty path near the creek. At the end of it was this long, lanky figure, white like cigarette smoke, changing its hand positions, and we could see its shoulders and its head and its legs and its feet. And it was above the water in this little creek, and maybe by 3 feet. It stood about 8 feet tall itself. People in the area call it Sasquatch because it's so tall, and so many people have seen it. Mm-hmm. It's oddly, when it cries, they call it Screaming Mary because it has the voice of a woman, which we don't know how to put together. We don't understand how that works. Huh. At any rate, we watched it for about an hour. It ran back and forth, and it flew over the creek several times, mm-hmm. and then ditched into a tall patch of weeds. And in the weeds, it was physically moving the weeds. We were all crying, and we eventually, as time was going on, we went down to this little area, took our shoes off, walked in the water, and we surrounded it, and we yelled at it to identify yourself because we were dumb 15-year-old kids, and that's what dumb 15-year-old kids do. Mm-hmm. And it was absolutely silent, and suddenly it vanished. Mm. So we were coming down on it with belts. We didn't know what else to do. We were scared, and girls were, very scared. Anyhow, that started a whole chain reaction with people in the area coming down to look for the ghost of the creek. Mm. And sometimes it would be parties that would involve as many as 200, maybe more, 300 people. That would bring food and beer and drink and sodas. And some people wore costumes, and they had great parties. I'd never want to be part of it because it was all so foul to me. but they would have great parties, and they would mimic. Some people would mimic the ghost, run out of the creek and start screaming at night, and anyhow, it became very famous. It's very well known in the area, and I've spoken to people who've seen it. I've interviewed people who boarded the property, or their properties, and they said that they're familiar with this case. It's still possibly there, but I have gone there many times and photographed and had witnesses with me, and there is absolutely nothing that we've ever seen after that.
So nobody was able to get a picture of this ghost, huh?
Not that I know. Unless somebody has it. Now, it's funny because the local library in this town just had called me the other day and asked me to speak about this at their library in New York. So people are still interested. People want to know about it. Now, I'm 60 years old. This happened when I was 15. Mm-hmm. I have a funny feeling that is the thing moved on or it was just a freak thing. Sometimes I think that it has something to do with a story about this area with UFOs. where this man was walking along the same path when he came upon a small UFO. I interviewed this man. He's now deceased. He said that he was with his dog, Barney, and this UFO landed. It was very small, though, he described, 10 feet wide, maybe. And out of it came a couple of beings that touched his shoulders and picked him up, he claimed.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't remember what happened after that. He went to the local police later after the thing took off, and they laughed at him and told him to go home and sober up.
Mm-hmm.
He said he doesn't drink and that he did see this thing. This is a story that he told me. Whether it's true or not, I can't verify.
Yeah. Well, there are many, many stories out there, and even though some of the these stories are backed up with physical evidence or circumstantial evidence, direct evidence in some cases, most of them are just anecdotal, and you have to take them at face value or don't take them, you know?
Oh, I fully agree with you on that. Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, but my sighting is anecdotal, but it spurred me into a lifetime of trying to prove to myself that I'm not crazy. You know,
mm-hmm. You know, it's funny, isn't it, that look where you are. You're interviewing about UFOs because
right.
Once it's got you, you're there. I mean, it's part of your life now. You've taken it in.
That's right.
My partner does not pursue UFOs. My ghost investigations partner.
Okay.
But I need to understand what happened to me in some instances, so I need to know. May I ask you, could you very briefly tell me what happened with your UFO?
Oh, here, all my listeners are going to go, oh, here comes this story again.
So yeah, but it's part of who you are, right?
Yeah. So I'll give you the short version. I was going off to bed on a Saturday night, and I looked out the window, and in a perfectly clear sky, there was one spot where there were green shimmering lights, and smoke was pouring out of this one point in the sky. And I called my parents, and we all went out on the front porch and watched this humongous craft emerge from this pinpoint in the sky and settle over our neighborhood for about 15 minutes, I assume. It was about 15 minutes, and then the whole sky was covered with this smoke, not cloud, smoke. And and then I find out later that my sister and I were abducted. And that's, you know, I thought maybe it just left. But after we saw this, you know, there was huge round lights of various colors on this craft. And hovered over us, and after seeing this light show, smoke and light show, we just walked back into the house and went to bed. Didn't say another word till the next day, which I have found in investigating that this happens all the time, where people just, you know, okay, that's over with. Let's go on about our lives.
Mm-hmm. So. Do you remember the creatures?
No, I do not, because to me, I was just shut off, you know, saw the craft, and a lot of people, this happens to a lot of people, most people that are abducted, they see the craft, and so that's the onset of the experience, and then all of a sudden, they see that it has departed, or they're watching it depart, and they don't remember what has happened in the interim. You know?
Or they're too tired, they want to get to sleep.
Yeah, that's was another, us.
that's what happened in the famous Allegash, let's see, that's in Maine, Allegash canoers,
right.
There were four of them, they were in a canoe, night fishing, had a big bonfire that they just lit so they could navigate their way back home from, you know, 200 yards. And they're in the middle of this waterway, beautiful, beautiful place. When suddenly they see this light in the sky, they take their flashlight, they start signaling it for fun, and next thing you know, it suddenly flies down to them. Next thing they know, the fire is basically out. They end up on the land now, watching the thing fly away, and the only thing they want to do is be quiet and go to bed.
No.
Years later, they realized something happened.
Yeah, they were on the canoe at the time they saw this light, right?
They were on the canoe. It's very strange because they had four guys on the canoe, and you never hear of four people in the canoe.
Right.
That always troubled me. But a little too close for comfort, if you ask me. But anyhow, that they all verified the same thing, so that's a typical kind of case.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I guess if it's a big enough canoe, you don't rock it.
You know, it's funny that they're the invisible UFOs. I mean, there are four kinds of invisible UFOs. One that you don't see. It happens that, you know, it came and you don't see it. One that you don't remember or you have been turned off to.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the actual craft that is invisible in the sky. People see it on radar or see signs of it, but it's nothing really there.
All right.
And for the sake of mystery, I'll leave out the fourth one. I don't even know what it was, but I know there are four that I have in my head anyhow. And I think that there are cases of invisible craft where, you know, not just where your memory fades and you don't remember it, or that it is a UFO that eludes visual sighting. But, you know, there are cases where, spurred by the John Hickovich, you know, Chicago Tribune report about the Chicago O'Hare International Airport incident.
Right.
You know, this is a Class B restricted airspace that has a UFO flying right over it, staying hovering for 10 minutes over it, and it doesn't show up on radar at all.
Right.
You know, doesn't show up on the radar. And, you know, there are other cases like, I think in 2006, there was an airplane, the 747, that actually hit something in the sky at 26,000 feet in China.
Right.
And it wasn't something that they saw, and it wasn't a bird. Birds don't fly at 26,000 feet. But when they landed, they found it, the cone all dented in and all scratched up.
Hmm.
No feathers or anything like that. What did they hit?
Right.
You know, there's a case where a guy in Japan was photographing with a video camera, photographing a jet landing, something flew dangerously close to it, almost hit it. It looked like it was on fire. Again, that thing of fire.
Mm-hmm.
And it could only be seen in the viewfinder because the naked eye could not see it. The camera could pick up the wavelengths. Then there's a case. There are a number of cases like that. The case in Volusia County, Florida, where there are deputy sheriffs out looking for drug traffickers, and in their flare camera, they see a UFO.
Right.
But it can't be seen with the naked eye.
Right.
So there are a lot of strange things. And when we come to the fact that people have experiences, they don't remember it, or they maybe it's right in front of them, they can't see it because they've been turned off to it. That's very common as well.
Mm. Yeah, there was a woman who's driving a car. I remember it was saw pictures of the car. It was blue, as I recall. And something hit her car on the side and knocked her right up, her car right over to the side of the road. And she gets out and looks at it. And the car, the metal, was all warped as if it had been dented in, although there were no scratches. It's like heat had warped the metal.
Mm.
And she felt that boom when she got hit, but it's hard to explain. There was damage to the car, but the damage wasn't like an object that hit it. It's like heat had melted this metal, the metal panels, and deform them.
Wow, isn't that strange?
Yeah.
I mean, we have that heat problem with the case in Texas in 1980, where the two women and one woman's grandchild were driving down this remote road when suddenly they were confronted with this UFO spitting out fire at the bottom of it.
Right. Cash Landrum.
I'm sorry, what's that?
Cash Landrum case.
That's right, the Cash Landrum case,
mm-hmm.
where she put her hand up against the dashboard and the hand impression stayed inside the dashboard.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, they got terribly sick from radiation poisoning and died, really, from it.
Right.
As time went on, the grandson grew sick.
Mm-hmm.
Who can explain? You know, a lot of people see UFOs and they seem to be in some kind of heat shimmer. Like we had a report here on Long Island of a black triangle floating over near an airport, and suddenly it stopped dead. The front of it was wavy, like shimmering, and suddenly it shifted the shimmering to the rear of the triangle, and the triangle went in reverse and disappeared. It actually descended into the someplace on land. So what is this heat shimmering? What is it? Is that the result of some kind of energy from the propulsion system?
Did you say the object appeared to descend into the ground?
Yes, we have a number of reports of that. Now, I've been focusing on, just the last year, on cases of orbs. People are seeing orbs, photographing orbs, multiple, usually seven, maybe eight in the sky. I have a lot of photography from that. And they see these things, but when they see them with their naked eye, a lot of times they see the structure. There's something going on there. They see the thing. People have reported that they descend, and they don't know where they go because these are populated areas here on Long Island, and you can't just take a UFO and ditch it into the ground. Everybody would notice. But here it is on video of the thing descending into the ground.
Wow.
You don't see it go into the ground. You just see it going down toward the ground.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, this is a new one to me because I've heard a lot about them going straight up. I've heard of them going into the water, coming out of the water, but not down into the ground. That's
right,
new one.
Right. Well, you know, according to the witnesses, though, that's how they put it. They went into the ground.
Yeah.
You know, they watch and they don't come back up. They don't ascend. They're staying there somewhere. They don't know where they went.
Wow. You know, we're talking about ghosts and UFOs and as if they're two different phenomenon. I've talked to many guests. And we've discussed this. Are these alien beings, are these craft extraterrestrial or other dimensional, like ghosts would be other dimensional, you know, the spiritual plane, different frequencies of existence? Is it possible that aliens / UFOs are, or some of them are, other dimensional as opposed to from another planet, in your opinion?
Wow, you know, you're way above my pay grade. you know, I can't answer. I mean, there are some questions you just have to say, I really don't know.
Yeah, you but know? You must have opinion on that.
Well, I think it seems that the things that I have seen, the experiences I had, seem to be of this world. They seem to be physical. They can move things. They have smells sometimes. You can hear them sometimes.
Right.
So I tend to feel like they're actually part of the physical environment. But when we talk about supernatural, we're using the word natural. It's supernatural, heightened nature. It's not exclusive from nature.
Right.
So if it's part of nature, I would think that it's a part of nature I know I don't understand.
Right.
I can't explain. Right. If it's interdimensional, oh man, that's really, you know, that's something for my mind that really I can't grasp. So
yeah, a little hard to grasp, but you know, these radio waves right now are going out, and they're in everyone's living room right now, whether they realize it or not. And the only way they're finding out that they are in their living room or in their car, whatever, is by using this device called the radio or computer to go into that, take that frequency that they're on and translate it into a frequency that is in our auditory range.
Mm-hmm.
So the same way with the television, all these pictures, I like to say when I'm giving a lecture, can you hear the music? Can you see the pictures? No, you know, but they're right here in this room. And I can prove it by if I have a device that translates those frequencies.
You know, I know exactly where you're going with this, and I agree. It's really, you know, but independent study of this issue has, you know, I've never really delved into it that deeply. Mm. I have opinions that, gee, you know, I read books about it. Wow. But have I ever really verified it through my investigation?
Mm.
No. So no. I think that it's certainly a possibility, and especially in this universe that we can't comprehend at all. It's vast and it's crazy and it's endless, and it's, you know, so many things that contradict physics are taking place, and of course anything can happen. It seems like a hard thing for a simple guy like me to say yes and try to explain.
Yeah, well, you know, just through investigation, some things stand out and some things don't, you know.
You know, if I might comment, you know, that's the thing about ghosts. Ghosts are, you go out and you study ghosts, and you photograph, and you make contact with all kinds of instruments. Okay, it's very small and very local, very, you know. But when you talk about UFOs, you're talking about generals, presidents, study teams, researchers, scientists. You're talking about documented photographs, video.
Right.
You know, there is such a vast difference between the two studies.
Right.
UFOs seem to be something that a lot of the scientific community has paid attention to for a good long time now.
Mm-hmm.
And there are places like Area 51 that we suspect are doing even more work on it. There's, you know, research going on reverse technology. And we maybe benefited from that through laser beams and other things. Mm. But, you know, the difference between the two is so vast that it's easy to study ghosts and say, oh, wow, something moved the glass. But when you talk about a propulsion system for a UFO that might be interdimensional, you know, that we're talking about a whole different ball game.
Right.
And it's a lot harder to be an expert at that than it is ghosts, I think.
Right. And I think going back to your question about these wavy lines that you see, is it the propulsion system? Yeah, I think it is the propulsion system. I think it's the electromagnetic propulsion system.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And, yeah. But,
well, you know, in the Hill case, Betty and Barney Hill, excuse me, in 1961, they were traveling through New Hampshire, the Franconia Notch, which is a beautiful, amazing place.
Right.
And suddenly their car is hit by these pulses.
Right.
And when they looked at their car, they had circles on their car in the metal from these pulses. And when they took a compass and they laid it right next to the car, to the circle, it went crazy. It just kept spinning. Mm. So yeah, there's electromagnetic energy that seems to be behind a lot of what goes on with UFOs.
That is right. I need to take one more minute just to remind our listeners, you're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves, and 89.3 FM on your radio. And you're listening to We Are Not Alone. I'm David Twitchell, and we're speaking with author and researcher, Mr. Joseph Flammer. Okay, so, Joseph, tell us a little bit about your book, UFOs Over Long Island. Any cases?
I've written two books,
yeah.
UFOs Over Long Island, which really documents my experience with the what I call the sleight of hand of the paranormal, or the strange, high strangeness that I've experienced with UFOs.
Mm-hmm.
In that case, it really started with me going out to a graveyard with seven other people, and at midnight, and they were all people I didn't know, because we had just formed the CE5 group, which our intention was to meditate to try to reach aliens by telepathic communication. Sounds really odd.
Mm-hmm.
It was the first time I tried it. The people I was with were engineers, really smart guys. I was probably the least, you know, brilliant of them.
Mm.
And we did it for an hour, did a meditation that Dr. Stephen Greer, the emergency room doctor who has been leading the Disclosure Project, has written in a book. And we read it, and we held hands, and we meditated on it and tried to reach the, pictured ourselves going out into space and trying to make contact and coming back and saying, okay, this is where we are, come and see us. And nothing happened. And then an hour later, when I'm traveling home, something happened. I look up in the sky, and there's a huge, huge craft. It looks sort of like a plane. It wasn't quite a plane. Only white lights, nothing flashing. And it was just stuck in the sky as if it had been glued there. It was just, I just stopped in the middle of the road. There was nobody around me. I just stared at it, and I couldn't believe what I saw until I saw a police car with its lights flash on coming toward me, because I knew I was in the middle of the left lane on my brakes, no good reason for it, with my half of my body standing stuck out the window looking at this thing. And in the next 2 months, I saw that happen two more times. I also had a wide variety of experiences in the six-month period, and then it suddenly just stopped, which is really strange. It just kind of dried up. I don't know what took place. But if you had an extra week, I'd tell you about some of these experiences.
So,
we don't have that kind of time.
In other words, be careful what you ask for, huh?
Be careful what you wish for. You just might get it, yep. Yeah.
I mean, so some of these, so the book, UFOs Over Long Island, is basically your experiences?
My experiences and my experience leading an investigation, largest paranormal investigation ever to take place on Long Island, involving 40 people over 3 months, looking for a thing we call the Long Island Devil. It's a black figure that people have been seeing. Stands about 6 feet tall, it's about 90 pounds, has long, lanky fingers and features, and has been seen in trees and has been seen in wooded areas. We've been trying to track that down to no avail. We've never been able to document it. But we have reports, we have documentation as far as people swearing that they saw this thing. And it's on video, you know, people telling us about it. I have drawings of it, pictures of it, you know, artist renderings of it, but we've never been able to document it.
Well,
I always felt that it was a perhaps an alien that survived either a crash, which has happened here in Long Island, supposedly, or possibly a shoot down, supposedly that happened here in Long Island too, where a craft was shot down. That I can't verify. I only know the legends.
Yeah, well, there's reportedly Bigfoot in that area as well, in Pennsylvania and New York, and you know, I was never into the Bigfoot phenomenon, but the more I study it, the more I find that Bigfoot has been seen in connection with UFOs.
Yes,
You wonder why, if Bigfoot existed, and it's a good argument that skeptics have, if Bigfoot exists, why aren't there carcasses? You know, they can't live forever. They can't hide for every place. Why aren't you finding some? Why aren't you finding the dead carcasses, etc.? Well, maybe they come in these UFOs and they depart in the UFOs. And or through a porthole to another dimension. What do you think? Thoughts on that?
Well, I know we have a professor here at the largest community college we have in New York State, on Long Island, Nassau Community College, a professor who has been lecturing, and he lectured here on Long Island, about the connection between UFOs and Bigfoot. Now, I'm not a Bigfoot guy either, to be honest with you. I study them in connection to the Long Island Devil and mild interest. But he says that he feels there's a definite connection of when a UFO shows up, they seem to show up. When they show up, a UFO is usually around, seen around. Now, this is not a guy who pursues UFOs on his own, but he has such documentation that he feels that he has a real case here. So, you know, it's something with that I don't really – I think also some of the television shows that I had to watch to be introduced to the different concepts are so ludicrous and so offensive to the intelligence, you know, that I find it like really hard to want to swallow. But there does seem to be something called Bigfoot, and there does seem to be some kind of connection between them and UFOs. So who am I to say, no, it can't happen because I saw a crappy TV show?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah, you see these Bigfoot hunters, and they come up with some brush moving, and they come up with some terrible noise, screams, and what have you. That's about it. You know, it's
some of them are such poor representatives of their interest. That it's like you said to yourself, how did they let them on TV? You know, they can't even speak properly.
Yeah.
You know, to communicate the basic idea.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I find I have problems with some of that. But the actual concept of Bigfoot, Sasquatch, and UFO, it's too widely spoken of to just ignore.
Yeah, I saw one of these ghosts. I can't remember. Ghost hunters or ghost adventures or whatever they were, they had what they like to call a ghost trap.
Mm.
And I don't remember. It was so ludicrous, in my opinion. Maybe you think this is a good thing. I don't know. But it was like a big jar, and they were going to force this ghost to go into the jar and then take the jar over to their laboratory and have a ghost in a jar.
Well, you know, it takes all types.
I don't know, but I mean, come on. If a ghost can walk through a door, I think he can get out of the jar, don't you?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh.
Yeah, I don't know what I can't explain how people do, you know, what they do. All I know is that I'm really not an expert at anything. I've been studying ghosts now closely, reading everything I can and getting out in the field. And I don't feel like I know any more than anybody else, really, when it comes down to it.
Yeah. Yeah, I've had ghost experiences. I talk about that in my first book. And yeah, I try to say, yeah, is this connected? Is this connected with the UFO phenomenon? Don't know. Pretty much, you know, and I'm not the expert. I can't say this is the way it is. I know what I saw. I know what I've studied as an investigator. I can put two and two together and come up with three, something like that. But I usually do come up with three. But the point is, I have these opinions that, based on what I've experienced and what I've learned, I put it out there. What do you think? So that's pretty much what my books are about. What do you think? Mm.
Yeah, unfortunately, it sometimes comes down to, you know, this is what I feel. What do you think?
Yeah.
Now, with ghosts, I have actually made contact with spirits. I have photographs of them and so forth. Ghosts.
Right.
Even if you make contact with a ghost directly, you still have questions about what it is that I just made contact with. The Bible says, if you believe in the Bible, that once a person is dead, he or she is dead. There is no contact after that. So some people will say, oh, it's not a person you're in contact with. You're in contact with a spiritual entity, a demon. You know, I don't even understand ghosts. How am I supposed to understand demons? You know? So it's way out of my league. And then it starts elevating even higher to, you know, you're speaking to an alien. Not only is an alien, he's a gray. Not only is he a gray, he's from a very specific part of the universe. And what he really wants is to make peace with us. No, what he really wants is to mine the ground. No, what he really wants is to claim the earth. No, what he really... And it goes on and on and on. So it ends up back where it started, an opinion.
That's right. That's right. And whether we're talking about ghosts or we're talking about aliens, there are factions that demonize them, and there are factions that deitize them. You know, they have a like when we had our sighting, my whole family was out there on the front lawn, And my mother looks up at this thing and says, it's the second coming.
Yes.
Very religious woman she was, and she felt that, you know, she can't explain it. She didn't know what it was, but so it did come down from the sky, therefore it must be the second coming. Now, she deitized it. Right. But others will say, oh, these are demons that are coming into our lives and taking us out of our beds and out of our, and it's not always from our beds either. It's from our cars, from our workplace. I had a friend who was an abductee. He was at a pool party, and a UFO went over the pool, and he jumped. He knew what was coming. He jumped in the pool, went underwater. Didn't help him.
Still got him. Yeah, I know in the Cash Landrum case we talked about before, I know the grandmother turned to her grandson as this thing was floating in front of him and said, that's the second coming. That's Jesus. He's come again.
Really?
And meanwhile, it was some kind of mechanical thing spitting out fire, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
I have a case, if we have another minute. I have a case here in Long Island where a guy, kind of sad, he saw something that it looked like a Bigfoot in his room. He drew a picture of it, and he had a UFO circle in his house. And he was so scared of this thing that he photographed the image, showed it to me, but he also showed his local priest. And his local priest said, no, it's not a UFO, it's not an alien. What it is a demon. Mm-hmm. If you have any problem, refer to the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
And so he quit speaking to me. He wouldn't talk to me or any other person and move on, because now he talks to the Bible. He looks at the Bible and reads it, and that's to solve his problem. Now, I'm not saying that, you know, I'm right about everything or that the Catholic priest is wrong, you know, but it seems like somewhat closed-minded to just say it's a demon without, you know, how does a demon fly a UFO? How does he fly a spaceship? Because that's what it looks like.
Yeah, it's kind of confusing. They say that the devil is the prince of the air. And yet, God's angels come down from the sky. Wait a minute. How do you know which is which?
Not only that, they have wings.
They have wings. And I mentioned this one case. This woman, an abductee, is telling the investigator about this gray alien that came and floated into her room and floated around the room, had wings. And the investigator said, did you see the wings? Well, no, I didn't see wings, but it was in the air, so it must have had wings. So that's where they get this idea. If it's in the air, coming down, you know, a biological entity coming down from the sky must have wings, or else how could it float, right?
Yeah, the etymology of where all this comes from on the beginnings is, you know, who can explain? You know, the real problem is, though, that we live in a planet where there's so much we don't understand. You know, we live in a universe that's incomprehensible.
Right.
So we're smack dab in the middle of it, trying to live our 80 years and get through it.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, all this is going on, and we don't know how to really solve it.
That's it. And I often say, I don't believe our physical brains could wrap itself around the entire truth of the matter, you know?
No, it's so big, maybe it takes in a lot of different parts of the truth, you know?
Yeah.
A lot of truth.
It does. Too much truth. So do you feel that the Long Island and the East Coast are a UFO hotspot?
Well, you know, we only have two investigators on all of Long Island, myself and somebody else.
Yeah.
And we only have about 10 in New York State. And I would say that there's a slice of Long Island and New York that seem to work as a straight line. And that part is more active, documented active, than other parts of New York. But
These
are more well-populated areas. You know, if you look at new MUFON statistics, we find that the United States leads the world in reports of UFOs. That New York and California lead the United States in reports of UFOs.
Mm-hmm.
you know, not South Dakota or Wyoming, right. Places that are really populated, the people are out, they're seeing things, they might more airplanes, more craft, more exploration by government, perhaps, large corporations. So I it seems to me that Long Island has more people who are witnessing it than other areas.
Right.
Doesn't mean necessarily that there aren't UFOs flying around South Dakota in the hills or in Wyoming in the flatlands. No. It just, what we see is maybe more reported than other places, but there's a lot of reports.
Joe, do you have a website people can go to?
Yes. It's called Paranormal Adventurers with an R, paranormaladventurers.com.
Paranormal Adventurers. Okay.
Adventurers.com.
Okay. Joseph Flammer, I appreciate you coming on today. Hope we
can
do this again another time.
Anytime you want. It was a pleasure. Thank you.
Okay. And if our listeners have any questions or comments for me, you can email me at dtwitchell@hotmail.com. This show, as well as all the forum shows, is now archived at whfr.fm's website. Click on Talk Shows on the homepage, then Tuesday Forum. We Are Not Alone is also archived at my website, which is ufoimplications.com. So please stay tuned to WHFR.FM, the station making waves, for the best in alternative programming. I want to thank you for joining us today. Please join us again the first Tuesday of each month at 1 p.m. when we will again explore the mysteries of the UFO phenomenon. Until then, this is David Twitchell reminding you to keep an eye on the sky.
You're listening to WHFR Dearborn. Guys and dolls out there, you're at the Malt Shop with Daddy G here on WHFR.FM, the station making waves. And we're going back to the 50s and the 60s. And so hang those fuzzy dice on the rearview mirror, grab your favorite squeeze, and head on down to the Malt Shop. The jukebox is playing, the kids are dancing, and here we are, back in the 50s.
Hey, baby, jump over here when you do the ooby-dooby. I just got a mini ooby-dooby, ooby-dooby.